Hello. This is the International GCSE English as a Second Language, Paper 2 Listening Test, Summer 2013. This test is in three parts. You will hear three extracts and will have to answer questions on what you hear. At the beginning of each extract, there will be a pause to give you time to read the questions. You will hear all three parts twice. Write your answers in the spaces in your question booklet as you listen. Part 1. In this part, you will hear a teacher talking to students about a school visit. For questions 1 to 10, listen and complete the notes about the visit. Write no more than three words and or a number for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Good afternoon. My name is Mrs. Holmes. Thank you for coming to this meeting today about the years 9 and 10 school trip to the Museum of Industry in Clifton next month. Please have a pen and paper handy to note down a few important details. So, let's look at the programme for the day. Please arrive at school at 7:30 for an 8 o'clock departure to the museum. The coach will not wait, so make sure you arrive in good time. We will get to Clifton at 10 and will leave there at 2:30. We aim to be back here at 4:30, traffic permitting. On arrival, we will all spend a short time in the interactive gallery, which has been very popular with previous groups. There you can view and experience climate change in action. We will then separate into year groups at about 10:30. Year 9 group. You will be visiting the Great Western Warehouse, which forms part of the museum. This trip is part of your science course, and you will be busy in the museum's school lab, located on the top floor. Here, you will become forensic science detectives and role-play a police investigation. An important museum piece has been stolen, and there are three possible suspects. You will look at evidence left at the crime scene to decide which suspect is the guilty one. You will be putting your knowledge of chemistry into practice in order to identify some unknown fibres found at the scene and solve the crime. Year 10 group. You are on this trip as part of your history course to learn about discoveries that changed the world. You will be in the Hill Street factory, learning how the inventors of a number of important machines turned Clifton into a centre of cotton making. You will be able to watch cotton being made, listen to stories of life in the factories of Clifton, and try your hand at some of the production processes as well. After your sessions, we will meet in the lunch area at 1 o'clock. You will need to go down to the basement of the Great Western Warehouse, where a room has been booked for us. At 1:45, we have seats booked on the world's oldest train for a brief tour of the museum grounds. After that, you will have time to visit the gift shop for some souvenirs and then get the coach back to school. So, that's what we'll be doing on the day. But in order for it to be a success, there are a few points I need to mention about expectations of behaviour. You will be representing the school, so we expect you to be pleasant and polite at all times. You will be accompanied by 5 members of staff, and you will be divided into 4 groups of 10. Please keep with your group and your leader throughout the visit. You may bring along your iPods, MP3s, and mobile phones for the journey, but they must not be used at any time in the museum. You must also remain seated on the bus at all times and use the seat belts provided. What to wear? I would recommend trousers, a light jumper, comfortable shoes, and don't forget to bring an umbrella in case it rains. One more thing, very important, all items of jewellery must be left at home that day. They could be a safety risk during some of the activities. We will be checking this on the bus. You will also need to bring a small backpack with a light lunch, such as sandwiches, fruit, and a soft drink. You will not be able to buy your lunch at the museum. Also, if you want a hot drink, you will need to bring that with you. You may also bring up to £5 on the trip to cover anything you want to buy at the museum. Oh yes, I forgot. If for some reason you get lost while you are at the museum, contact the nearest member of the museum staff or ask anybody where reception is.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Good afternoon. My name is Mrs. Holmes. Thank you for coming to this meeting today about the years 9 and 10 school trip to the Museum of Industry in Clifton next month. Please have a pen and paper handy to note down a few important details. So, let's look at the programme for the day. Please arrive at school at 7:30 for an 8 o'clock departure to the museum. The coach will not wait, so make sure you arrive in good time. We will get to Clifton at 10 and will leave there at 2:30. We aim to be back here at 4:30, traffic permitting. On arrival, we will all spend a short time in the interactive gallery, which has been very popular with previous groups. There you can view and experience climate change in action. We will then separate into year groups at about 10:30. Year 9 group. You will be visiting the Great Western Warehouse, which forms part of the museum. This trip is part of your science course and you will be busy in the museum's school lab, located on the top floor. Here, you will become forensic science detectives and role-play a police investigation. An important museum piece has been stolen, and there are three possible suspects. You will look at evidence left at the crime scene to decide which suspect is the guilty one. You will be putting your knowledge of chemistry into practice in order to identify some unknown fibres found at the scene and solve the crime. Year 10 group. You are on this trip as part of your history course to learn about discoveries that changed the world. You will be in the Hill Street factory, learning how the inventors of a number of important machines turned Clifton into a centre of cotton making. You will be able to watch cotton being made, listen to stories of life in the factories of Clifton, and try your hand at some of the production processes as well. After your sessions, we will meet in the lunch area at 1 o'clock. You will need to go down to the basement of the Great Western Warehouse, where a room has been booked for us. At 1:45, we have seats booked on the world's oldest train for a brief tour of the museum grounds. After that, you will have time to visit the gift shop for some souvenirs and then get the coach back to school. So, that's what we'll be doing on the day. But in order for it to be a success, there are a few points I need to mention about expectations of behaviour. You will be representing the school, so we expect you to be pleasant and polite at all times. You will be accompanied by 5 members of staff, and you will be divided into 4 groups of 10. Please keep with your group and your leader throughout the visit. You may bring along your iPods, MP3s, and mobile phones for the journey, but they must not be used at any time in the museum. You must also remain seated on the bus at all times and use the seat belts provided. What to wear? I would recommend trousers, a light jumper, comfortable shoes, and don't forget to bring an umbrella in case it rains. One more thing, very important, all items of jewellery must be left at home that day. They could be a safety risk during some of the activities. We will be checking this on the bus. You will also need to bring a small backpack with a light lunch, such as sandwiches, fruit, and a soft drink. You will not be able to buy your lunch at the museum. Also, if you want a hot drink, you will need to bring that with you. You may also bring up to £5 on the trip to cover anything you want to buy at the museum. Oh yes, I forgot. If for some reason you get lost while you are at the museum, contact the nearest member of the museum staff or ask anybody where reception is.
That's the end of part one. Now turn to part two. Part 2. In this part, you will hear two students, Maxine and Peter, discussing arrangements for Teachers' Day. Questions 11 to 15 must be answered with a cross in the box. If you change your mind about an answer, put a line through the box and then indicate your new answer with a cross. For questions 16 to 20, complete the sentences. Use no more than two words. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Maxine. Have you had any thoughts about the class's plans for Teachers' Day next month?
Well, as you know, there's a whole school event in the main hall after lunch, and each class is organising something for their form teacher in the classroom, either before or after the break, right?
Yes, that's it.
OK, so I've spoken to everyone and they've come up with quite a few ideas. Too many, in fact, and we'll need to be a bit selective. Some students have been rather too ambitious, if you ask me. I don't think they've thought about the time or cost involved at all.
Ah, well, let's hear the best ones from your point of view.
One was to bring in a couple of cakes at break time, if that's possible. We know how much Mr. Thomas loves fruitcake, so we thought we'd buy one of those for him. And we'd get a chocolate or vanilla one as well.
Oh, but that's the same as last year. Can't we do something different this time? I'm sure Mr. Thomas wouldn't be the only one to find it a bit dull to do that all over again.
OK, point taken.
Why don't we do something as soon as we get in? What about ordering breakfast in for everyone? A hot drink and toast, or a muffin, or croissants from the cafe opposite? Nothing too fancy. But it might be a nice way to start and we can go on from there.
Not a bad idea, but won't it be too costly? Although I suppose it won't take too long to sort out.
Yeah, we can get everyone to tell us what they want beforehand and warn the cafe in advance. That should make it easy. How much money should we ask from everyone for everything?
What about £2 each for everything? There are 25 of us in the class, which means we'd have £50 to spend.
Can we make it a pound more? I'm sure everyone can afford that.
Yeah, you're right. We can all stretch to that. I'll ask everyone.
OK, so that's the food sorted out.
Fine. What's next? Oh, yes, gifts. What shall we give him?
A card and a bunch of flowers?
I don't think that would go down well with Mr. Thomas. Maybe with Mrs. Thomas. Someone thought of getting a coffee mug with Mr. Thomas's name on, or something like that.
What about one with all our names on? There's a shop in town that does that.
Yes, that sounds better. And a card?
Yes. Anything else?
No, I don't think so.
OK, so how about decorating the classroom?
Yes. We already have a box of streamers from last year. We should get a few new ones, I think, as well as some balloons and a sign. What about some lights?
Too expensive. And I don't think we'd be allowed to have them, and we'd have to get them checked by the school technician. I don't think it's worth all that effort.
But they would look nice.
Well, if you want to have them, you go ahead and sort that out. I think paper decorations and balloons would be enough.
OK, I'll see what I can do there. What about the sign? What should it say?
Something like, "Thank you, Mr. Thomas," or "Thanks for a great year." We've put it above the door in the past, and I don't think that's the best place for it. Any ideas?
On the whiteboard? On the teacher's desk? How about hanging it in front of a window?
I think his table would be ideal. We could also get someone to decorate the whiteboard with a drawing of him.
All right, then.
which brings us to the entertainment. Now, what we did last year was really nice, and we should definitely do something like that again. A few songs, perhaps?
Only this year we need to rehearse more, and maybe add some dancing as well.
There'll be enough of that later on in the day. I think we should keep it simple.
Anything else?
What about games?
OK, but nothing too serious. Something more active would be better, and something that everyone can do. And on a more serious note, we need someone to make a speech.
Fine. One more idea that the others mentioned was recording it all and putting it up on the internet. A lot of schools are doing this now. What do you think?
We would need to get permission from the principal first and make sure that no one in the class minds.
Yes, you're right.
I worry that our parents might not be too happy with the idea of a recording either. So let's go back to the class and talk about this again. Also, Mr. Thomas might not think it's a great idea. I think we should ask a senior teacher about this idea before we go ahead.
Well, that about covers it for now. When do you think we should meet?
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Hi, Peter.
Hi, Maxine. Have you had any thoughts about the class's plans for Teachers' Day next month?
Well, as you know, there's a whole school event in the main hall after lunch, and each class is organising something for their form teacher in the classroom, either before or after the break, right?
Yes, that's it.
OK, so I've spoken to everyone and they've come up with quite a few ideas. Too many, in fact, and we'll need to be a bit selective. Some students have been rather too ambitious, if you ask me. I don't think they've thought about the time or cost involved at all.
Ah, well, let's hear the best ones from your point of view.
One was to bring in a couple of cakes at break time, if that's possible. We know how much Mr. Thomas loves fruitcake, so we thought we'd buy one of those for him, and we'd get a chocolate or vanilla one as well.
Oh, but that's the same as last year. Can't we do something different this time? I'm sure Mr. Thomas wouldn't be the only one to find it a bit dull to do that all over again.
OK, point taken.
Why don't we do something as soon as we get in? What about ordering breakfast in for everyone? A hot drink and toast, or a muffin, or croissants from the cafe opposite? Nothing too fancy, but it might be a nice way to start and we can go on from there.
Not a bad idea, but won't it be too costly? Although I suppose it won't take too long to sort out.
Yeah. We can get everyone to tell us what they want beforehand and warn the cafe in advance. That should make it easy. How much money should we ask from everyone for everything?
What about £2 each for everything? There are 25 of us in the class, which means we'd have £50 to spend.
Can we make it a pound more? I'm sure everyone can afford that.
Yeah, you're right. We can all stretch to that. I'll ask everyone.
OK, so that's the food sorted out.
Fine. What's next? Oh, yes, gifts. What shall we give him?
A card and a bunch of flowers?
I don't think that would go down well with Mr. Thomas. Maybe with Mrs. Thomas. Someone thought of getting a coffee mug with Mr. Thomas's name on, or something like that.
What about one with all our names on? There's a shop in town that does that.
Yes, that sounds better. And a card?
Yes. Anything else?
No, I don't think so.
OK, so how about decorating the classroom?
Yes. We already have a box of streamers from last year. We should get a few new ones, I think, as well as some balloons and a sign. What about some lights?
Too expensive. And I don't think we'd be allowed to have them, and we'd have to get them checked by the school technician. I don't think it's worth all that effort.
But they would look nice.
Well, if you want to have them, you go ahead and sort that out. I think paper decorations and balloons would be enough.
OK, I'll see what I can do there. What about the sign? What should it say?
Something like, "Thank you, Mr. Thomas," or "Thanks for a great year." We've put it above the door in the past, and I don't think that's the best place for it. Any ideas?
On the whiteboard? On the teacher's desk? How about hanging it in front of a window?
I think his table would be ideal. We could also get someone to decorate the whiteboard with a drawing of him.
All right, then. Which brings us to the entertainment. Now, what we did last year was really nice, and we should definitely do something like that again. A few songs, perhaps?
Only this year we need to rehearse more, and maybe add some dancing as well.
There'll be enough of that later on in the day. I think we should keep it simple.
Anything else?
What about games?
Okay, but nothing too serious. Something more active would be better, and something that everyone can do. And on a more serious note, we need someone to make a speech.
Fine. One more idea that the others mentioned was recording it all and putting it up on the internet. A lot of schools are doing this now. What do you think?
We would need to get permission from the principal first and make sure that no one in the class minds.
Yes, you're right.
I worry that our parents might not be too happy with the idea of a recording either. So let's go back to the class and talk about this again. Also, Mr. Thomas might not think it's a great idea. I think we should ask a senior teacher about this idea before we go ahead.
Well, that about covers it for now. When do you think we should meet?
That's the end of part two. Now turn to part three. Part 3. In this part, you will hear an extract from a radio programme about the history of snow skiing. Listen and complete the sentences below. Write no more than three words for each answer. First, you have 1 minute to read the questions. Now listen and answer the questions.
Until about 4,000 years ago, long before skis were invented, people would move about snow-covered lands in northern Europe hunting for food with a pair of snowshoes strapped to their feet. These looked rather like having a tennis racket attached to each foot and were clumsy to use. Although the exact origins of the ski have been lost in the mists of time, the idea of gliding on snow was simply a solution to the tiring business of hunting animals in awkward footwear. In Norway, the oldest cave painting ever discovered there shows a person on skis. Also, in the Swedish marshes, geologists have found fragments of skis. Stone Age skis tended to be longer than modern ones, but one type was popular in Scandinavia even up to 150 years ago. Called lap skis, these were skis of unequal length, something that seems most unusual these days. There was a long ski for gliding and a short ski, called a kick ski, which was used for pushing. This shorter ski was covered in animal skin to stop it sliding backwards. Norwegian history is full of many stories of skiing. In 1206, two of the king's faithful bodyguards skied across snow-covered mountains carrying the infant prince to safety. This was an epic journey. Years later, King Gustav skied 55 miles to defend his country from invasion by the Danes. His actions are remembered today by a cross-country ski race, which is still the longest in the world. During the 15th and 16th centuries, stories of skiing frequently attracted people to northern Europe to see it for themselves. But as late as the 19th century, skiing was considered socially unacceptable, and, as far as most were concerned, it was a poor form of transport used by farmers and labourers. The first skier in America to become famous was John Thompson. Between 1856 and 1876, he carried the mail to small villages and settlements located high in the mountains of California without receiving any form of payment. This brave man used enormous skis 4 meters in length. His only means of control was a heavy ski pole, which he would hold in both hands and dig into the snow in order to reduce his speed. The father of modern skiing is regarded as Norwegian Sondre Norheim. He was obsessed with skiing from an early age and invented a short, curved, flexible ski 2.5 meters in length. He also invented a binding to fix both his toe and heel more tightly to the skis so that he could move between trees and rocks at great speed. It is notable that the skis Norheim designed in the 1860s have remained more or less unaltered, except for the materials, until today. Norheim was also a brilliant skier, and he is credited with developing 2 new turns when skiing downhill. Many heard about this extraordinary man, and in 1868, at the age of 42, he was invited to take part in a jumping competition. He came first, beating other competitors who were mostly half his age. The leap was recorded as 18 metres. To put this in context, the record for large hill ski jumping today is over 140 metres. In the 1880s, other people began to show an interest in skiing as a sport, and many more turns and ski equipment were developed. Ski schools started to open, and winter sports holidays became popular. However, in these early days, ice skating was the main attraction, and skiing took very much second place, skiers being regarded mostly as figures of fun. Later, it became a sport of the rich and fashionable. As interest increased, the first package ski holidays to Switzerland took place in 1903. If you go on the ski slopes today, you will also see a recent development in winter sports, snowboarding, which uses a single board similar to surfing and skateboarding. Snowboarding was first seen in the 1920s and 1930s in the US, but it wasn't until the 1960s that it became possible to buy a snowboard. At first, it appealed to a small group of people, but they were not widely respected by the ski industry, which rather looked down its nose at these new upstarts. Snowboarding was seen as a fad that would quickly disappear, and initially, many resorts did not allow snowboards. However, the sport gained huge popularity, and in 1998, snowboarding became an Olympic winter sport.
Now listen a second time and check your answers.
Until about 4,000 years ago, long before skis were invented, people would move about snow-covered lands in northern Europe, hunting for food with a pair of snowshoes strapped to their feet. These looked rather like having a tennis racket attached to each foot and were clumsy to use. Although the exact origins of the ski have been lost in the mists of time, the idea of gliding on snow was simply a solution to the tiring business of hunting animals in awkward footwear. In Norway, the oldest cave painting ever discovered there shows a person on skis. Also, in the Swedish marshes, geologists have found fragments of skis. Stone Age skis tended to be longer than modern ones, but one type was popular in Scandinavia even up to 150 years ago. Called lap skis, these were skis of unequal length, something that seems most unusual these days. There was a long ski for gliding and a short ski, called a kick ski, which was used for pushing. This shorter ski was covered in animal skin to stop it sliding backwards. Norwegian history is full of many stories of skiing. In 1206, two of the king's faithful bodyguards skied across snow-covered mountains, carrying the infant prince to safety. This was an epic journey. Years later, King Gustav skied 55 miles to defend his country from invasion by the Danes. His actions are remembered today by a cross-country ski race, which is still the longest in the world. During the 15th and 16th centuries, stories of skiing frequently attracted people to Northern Europe to see it for themselves. But as late as the 19th century, skiing was considered socially unacceptable, and, as far as most were concerned, it was a poor form of transport used by farmers and labourers. The first skier in America to become famous was John Thompson. Between 1856 and 1876, he carried the mail to small villages and settlements located high in the mountains of California without receiving any form of payment. This brave man used enormous skis 4 meters in length. His only means of control was a heavy ski pole, which he would hold in both hands and dig into the snow in order to reduce his speed. The father of modern skiing is regarded as Norwegian Sondre Norheim. He was obsessed with skiing from an early age and invented a short, curved, flexible ski 2.5 meters in length. He also invented a binding to fix both his toe and heel more tightly to the skis so that he could move between trees and rocks at great speed. It is notable that the skis Norheim designed in the 1860s have remained more or less unaltered, except for the materials, until today. Norheim was also a brilliant skier, and he is credited with developing 2 new turns when skiing downhill. Many heard about this extraordinary man, and in 1868, at the age of 42, he was invited to take part in a jumping competition. He came first, beating other competitors who were mostly half his age. The leap was recorded as 18 metres. To put this in context, the record for large hill ski jumping today is over 140 metres. In the 1880s, other people began to show an interest in skiing as a sport, and many more turns and ski equipment were developed. Ski schools started to open, and winter sports holidays became popular. However, in these early days, ice skating was the main attraction, and skiing took very much second place, skiers being regarded mostly as figures of fun. Later, it became a sport of the rich and fashionable. As interest increased, the first package ski holidays to Switzerland took place in 1903. If you go on the ski slopes today, you will also see a recent development in winter sports, snowboarding, which uses a single board similar to surfing and skateboarding. Snowboarding was first seen in the 1920s and 1930s in the US, but it wasn't until the 1960s that it became possible to buy a snowboard. At first, it appealed to a small group of people, but they were not widely respected by the ski industry, which rather looked down its nose at these new upstarts. Snowboarding was seen as a fad that would quickly disappear, and initially, many resorts did not allow snowboards. However, the sport gained huge popularity, and in 1998, snowboarding became an Olympic winter sport.
That's the end of the test. Please wait for your question booklets to be collected. Thank you, and good luck.